meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change on this brilliant Wednesday. That means you got Father Tom Coys with you here. And I do want to wrinkle your brain. My brain is wrinkled so often. And thank goodness I can resort to great Catholic teaching, great Catholic theology and philosophy to weave my way through this crazy world of ours, right? That is one of the great benefits of being a Catholic. There's so much wisdom. And we just scratch the surface in so many different ways.
I am the gift.
That's, well, yes, our faith is the gift, isn't it? The more we dive into it, the more we appreciate it. It's a challenge. There's a lot that could get us upset. And I have to say this off the bat. There's an attitude that says, don't listen to the news because it only gets you depressed. Don't listen to the news because it's all bad news. You don't want especially little ears to hear some of the crazy things that are going on today. I gotta agree with that. You gotta watch out for children and try to maintain that innate innocence. With little ones, but as they get older, and unfortunately the getting older is getting younger and younger because they're going to be exposed to crazier and crazier things, especially that have to do with, human sexuality, which is always in the news. But there's much wisdom, and that's what I want to get to. Before we get to a sermon that I gave just recently, and I'm going to try to unpack it for you here. But today I was reminded, today if you're listening live, is May 31. Isn't that amazing? Tomorrow's June. Anyways, if you're listening on podcast, it's probably already June. But anyways, today is the anniversary, the 15th anniversary of when Father Anthony Bush got the beautiful Our Lady of the Sign iconic monstrance. If you've been to St. Stanislaus Kostka, undoubtedly you've seen it. It's probably the biggest monstrance you'll ever see. And that's worth much applause. And I can't believe it's 15 years. I remember when Father Tony was trying to get that made, and when it finally came out, It's a unique kind of adoration chapel because it's in the main body of the church, so it's not a separate room, but it's off to the side. St. Stan's is such a big church, you could easily accommodate such a thing. And people who come in and out of the church will find a quiet place there to pray from our Lord. The base of the monstrance, you can call it. It's a statue of Mary with a large consecrated host right in her heart, preciously depicting our Lord in her soul, in her mind. but also it's on the Ark of the Covenant. There's a, I think it's probably life size. It looks about the size that you read in the Old Testament about the Ark of the Covenant, the golden box that contained the tablets of the Ten Commandments. I was reading this. There's a wonderful book called The Jewish Roots of the Catholic Liturgy Brant Petrie, wonderful Catholic writer and now a biblical scholar. He reminded me, if you look carefully, most of us do recall that ark, the box, the golden box, with the angels with their wings attached. Most people know about that because of Raiders of the Lost Ark, the movie. They had a depiction of it, and it was pretty accurate according to the Bible there. And so most of us know that it was containing the stone tablets that God wrote the Ten Commandments on. Wouldn't it be great to find those? They got lost. You know, the whole ark got lost. I'm hoping they find it on Oak Island. Do you know what I'm talking about, friends? Oak Island. There's a few of us that are the Treasures of Oak Island fans. It's an island off the coast of Nova Scotia where they have been digging for a hidden treasure for years and years. There's a History Channel series called The Mystery of Oak Island. People have died trying to find it. It's like they find, there's like tunnels, caves, holes, like 150, 200 feet deep, where they found platforms buried down there. There's like, how the heck? And they think it may have been put there by, in the late 1500s, 1600s. One theory that they have is that a lot of the gold and silver that was taken, stolen from Mexico area. Of course, a lot of gold and silver was discovered. That was why the New World was such a great emerging market for the bigwigs, the merchants of Europe. They were interested in the New World. That was a great clash between those who discovered people over here and wanted to make them good children of God, baptizing and making them good Christian Catholics. But there were others that didn't care so much about that. They cared about making lots of money. So they did reap a lot of benefits from that gold and silver. One of the theories of Oak Island is that they loaded up some of that golden treasure and sailed north up the coast of the United States and eventually dug a deep hole and hid some of that gold and silver 200 feet down. Anyways, I'm another speculative.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, it's wrinkle your brain. Some are speculating, oh, it's where the Holy Grail is, although there's a church in Europe that thinks it has the Holy Grail, the Chalice of the Last Supper, but also perhaps it has the Ten Commandments. I would love them to find something. There's got to be, if there isn't now, there must have been something hidden down there if they did dig that deep passage, that it was actually in booby trap, so that if you went so deep, the ocean water would rush into it from other tunnels, that then you would drown. Anyways, that's not my main topic for today. Tune in to the, if you see me on the street and you want to make me smile, tell me what the latest discovery of Oak Island, the Luganis brothers. These great guys, I love those two brothers. They're construction workers. They have their own excavation company, what have you, and they're just guys, you know, and they're on a treasure hunt of all treasure hunts. And the one thing I must say to you, though, if you're going to watch that episode, those episodes, you could probably watch it the whole 45 minutes or 50 minute hour show in about 8 minutes because they just repeat everything. And they know how to try to keep you watching for all. So anyways, maybe they'll find the tablets of the Ten Commandments down there on Oak Island off of Nova Scotia. Otherwise, you would find them, maybe they're in the iconic Monstrance right here in Chicago, in the beautiful Monstrance at St. Stanislaus Kostka. Maybe that's why Father Tony keeps it. Maybe that's his big secret. Wouldn't that be interesting? Let's start a rumor. How about that the Ten Commandments are there at St. Stanislaus Kostka? That'll be good. Anyways, God bless all those people who worked hard and contributed big bucks to make a beautiful sign of the presence of Christ in the world today, obviously, right? In the Eucharist and in that any monstrance, of course. It's one of the biggest ones I've ever seen. And actually, you know, the size, you know, size doesn't always mean greatness, but this is a beautiful, great monstrance. I'm going to have to mention a small monstrance that is used. I have a wonderful friend, Father Coleman, and he has probably the smallest monstrance we have. And if we're on vacation or on a day off, we'll put a host in this little small monstrance, and we can make our own little holy hour wherever you go. That's kind of a big privilege of being a priest or being with people, with priestly people. Whoa. So, anyways.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's brain wrinkling. Okay, so the main topic for today of brain wrinkling is teleology. Okay, teleology. I'm sure I've mentioned this before. It's a philosophical term, but we need it today big time because of the situation that we are experiencing. Many people, many voices that are recovering the sense that if there is no God as a creator, then we as humans can do what we have often and always attributed to God, namely giving reality its meaning. And in the creation of things, we get to determine what their purpose and end, what their goals are, or, you know, whether or not there are any. Maybe something has no purpose or end. The reason that's an important philosophical term today is obviously because the sense of being a man and being a woman are controversial topics today. And the idea that a person with a body that has male attributes, or a person that has female attributes, the maleness and femaleness are what we determine them as. They're not innate in anything. The meaning and the purpose is imposed or put on them by us. And that's, we can thank William of Ockham. Do you remember this guy, William of Ockham? And this is going back even before Martin Luther, not too much before, but he was in England a couple centuries before. Let's see, he lived. William Ockham was a 14th century English philosopher and a Franciscan friar. So he was a monk, Franciscan monk, a little bit after St. Francis. You know, unfortunately, it shows one of the great weaknesses of Franciscan spirituality, the beauty of simplicity, the beauty of not taking the intellect too seriously, the beauty of trying to avoid argumentation at all costs. That's kind of what Franciscan spirituality is noted for, and in many, many, many ways, it's very beautiful. We could learn a lot from it. However, there is a danger, and that is when a topic does become serious, and to ignore such a issue before us, before the world, what have you, can cause great difficulties. And that's the friend, William of Ockham, was a Franciscan friar, but he kind of created a name for himself by being the opponent of Thomas Aquinas. And I stumbled upon this, and I shared this with a sermon not long ago, because I discovered that the Pope that canonized Thomas Aquinas, and most of us know who Thomas Aquinas is, and we know that he's a saint, but the same Pope that canonized Thomas Aquinas excommunicated William of Ockham. I forgot about that. I didn't really know that he was excommunicated. Actually, reading a little bit more, he was excommunicated and then reinstated by another pope, and I think then excommunicated again. It's something to be excommunicated twice, right? Anyways, so William of Ockham was, let's see here, little is known about his early life. He is said to have been born in the small village of Ockham in England between 1285 and 1288, okay? So late 13th century, before the 1400s. He was given to the Franciscan as a young boy and was sent to London to be educated. The Franciscans in London were well respected for their educational institution, which is interesting because the Franciscans in the continent, European continent, were not so well known or respected for their educational institution. William of Ockham began his theological training around 1301 when he was in his 20s. By 1318, he was studying theology at Oxford, but he did not complete the program and returned to the Franciscan monastery. His writings and views were controversial. Around 1323, he was accused of teaching heresy. A dispute arose between the Franciscans and Pope John XXIII over apostolic poverty, and William was asked to study the issue. Now, it doesn't say who asked him. I don't know if it was the Pope or the Franciscan people. And I got to read a little bit more about that. Apostolic poverty, of course, Franciscans take the vow of poverty. And some monasteries, some religious groups that take the vow of poverty there can be two problems. On the one hand, people can take the vow of poverty and not live it and just live too luxurious of a life. Therefore, they're breaking their vow of poverty. There's another way they can go against a right way of thinking, is that a superior would be so strict about poverty, they wouldn't allow even any donations, wouldn't allow any really making money or profit from selling vegetables or what have you. In other words, you go too strong on the sense of embracing poverty. And I don't think it was this Pope John the 22nd, but I know it was one Pope who had to tell the poor clares that you have to be able to take care of yourself in some worldly way. And so but I think he was excommunicated more. Let's see, he was excommunicated in 1328. He died in Germany, and then Pope Innocent VI rehabilitated him in 1859. So then I think he gets excommunicated again. But anyways, that's not the main thing. I want to connect his air is bad philosophy to what I see today in so much of the defense, the rhetoric, the words, the arguments to promote, to defend, to accept the homosexual movement that's so powerful, and this new transgender movement that's so powerful. So again, let's dive into that a little bit more. Good philosophy is so needed. Bad philosophy is the cause of much problems, not only in society at large, in the political scheme of things, but yeah, but also even within our homes, within our own relationships between family members, we got to be good philosophers. Okay, so let's take our first break. Okay, Nick, you got us there covered. I'm Father Tom Coy's guest host on The Winds of Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI Catholic Radio. We are on AM 750 WNDZ, and we are 88.5 FM WFSI.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
I'm Father Tom Coys, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Koska is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when Masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Koska is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coys here. Got to wrinkle your brain a little bit. I touched on this in a sermon, and it helped in some ways. What I'm trying to do with this is give you some tools with which to work with those who we could use the word woke, who find themselves being woke. I don't know if you heard the news recently on The View, forget one of her, Joy, the blonde who sits in the middle. I can never get their names right, but she was saying how woke she is. She's proud to be woke, and she knows that it's good to be woke because we must, in their trying to put their position in the best of light, they're just trying to say, we have to like everyone. We have to accept everyone as they are, different as they are from us. And to be woke means to be loving because you are accepting everyone for as they are. However, you've got to see the hypocrisy in that because it's bad philosophy. It's so obvious to see because you're saying you are trying to defend a certain group of people because they're different than you, but you are ready to condemn anyone who would disagree with your opinion about certain human actions and moral principles. Anyways, so this lesson about William of Ockham and the debate between William and Ockham, a Franciscan who was excommunicated and Thomas Aquinas, who was canonized and became one of the great teachers, it's key, my friends, to have a grasp of these issues. In order to do so, let's resort to the internet here. You can find this called The Four Causes in a website called Aquinas 101. I really like it. Instead of me explaining it, I'll let this wonderful Dominican priest say. And the reason this is important is because William of Ockham is known for his theory that cut the causes apart. They're not linked together in reality. The idea that let's analyze causes in a deep way, and we need to do this because one of the most important questions we almost always ask, we should ask it, is why, right? Why do things happen? Why is this going on? Anybody who's ever asked why should be interested in Aquinas' four causes, because they help us try to figure out why something's going on.
Oh, when will
and
this
to ignore
mad
or to be ignorant of these four causes is to automatically be a victim of William of Ockham's razor, who cut these things apart and then ridiculed and threw, I say, at least three of the four causes into the garbage bin of intellectual trash, he would want to say. They're bad ideas as opposed to recognizing them as good ideas. Here's Aquinas 101. He's trying to explain it this way. It goes.
Think about a wooden dining room table. Why is the table this way? Now, the first answer might refer to the carpenter who made the table. He is the efficient cause. In general, the efficient cause is the agent or thing that brings something about. This is what most people think of when they hear the word cause. In fact, the word efficient comes from the Latin term for making. The efficient cause is what makes the thing or the effect. The second answer to this question, why is the table this way, is the material cause of the table, wood. This might make a big difference in the quality and properties of the table. Mahogany is elegant, while pine is more basic. Bamboo is light, while oak is heavy and durable. But there's a third reason why the table is this way. It's the form, or the structure, or the design of the table. This is what we call the formal cause. Now, by form, Aquinas means more than the physical shape of the thing. He's referring to the essence or the nature of the thing, what makes it the kind of thing it is. Now, Aquinas thinks that all natural things have an intrinsic form or essence. The form, essence, or nature of lion is, in a certain sense, why a lion is the kind of animal it is. And this form or nature is really in the lion.
I got to stop the good Father Dominican priest here, because just the very word nature has to really penetrate our minds, and because most people educated without much philosophy, as soon as you hear the word nature, you're going to think of the national park system or trees and bushes and animals. That's not at all a philosophical definition of nature. We still have that sense of nature in our minds today, where the nature, actually, we're just to use a little example from church life, which maybe many of us, if not all of us, would be familiar with. We're trying to organize and plan a healing service. I think many of us recognize that boy, there's a lot of need for healing, a lot of need for even exorcisms, a lot of need for deliverance of evil spirits. And so, anyways, we'll tell more about that. We're going to have, maybe some people might know of a guy by the name of Mike Nolan. He's got the gift of healing. He's been around the country, if not the world, and we're going to get him here in July. Anyways, we're trying to plan a healing service. And to be perfectly honest, I haven't planned a lot of healing services in my day, but I want to participate in one. I want to promote it. And so we ask the question, well, what's the nature of this service going to be like? What's the nature? What's its form going to take? And that's more of the philosophical definition of nature, which is what this little lesson about the four causes is. Or you can even say if you're trying to analyze or trying to bring peace between two arguing people, you obviously say, what's the nature of your problem? What's at the heart? What's the essence? What's the nature of this difficulty? Which you can ask it between two brothers who are fighting over their right to sit up in the front seat of the car, right? isn't that what all brothers or siblings fight about when they're little? I get to ride shotgun. Anyways, you could say, what's the nature of your argument? Or it could be between nations that are at war, Ukraine and Russia. What is the nature of their conflict? Unfortunately, I'm afraid we don't know that completely very, very well. We should be more interested in the nature of that conflict, the essence of it. So everything, this is what we'll have to conclude with. You can look at anything in existence, anything that we would say created, if you believe in a creator, anything you can bump into in nature, and that would be animals, trees, people, buildings, bridges, as a nature. And so he's using the example of a table, which is obviously familiar to us all. But he's getting to the heart of the matter about the causes, the four causes. And I got to kind of explain then why William of Ockham got excommunicated for his razor.
Now, in addition to this, Aquinas identifies some forms that are outside or extrinsic to a thing. He calls these ideas or an exemplar. Think, for example, of the table's design. It starts in the carpenter's mind as he thinks about what he's going to make. And this idea then guides his activity. He doesn't saw wood at random, but he follows his plan. In fact, it's a kind of metaphysical law that every act of efficient causality is guided by some formal causality. Now, this idea or exemplar also becomes the measure of the carpenter's work.
I got to repeat that because it's so important. All efficient causes, everything that's done, made, follows a formal cause. The idea of manufacturing without a plan is ludicrous. Nothing humanly created, manufactured, invented, can be done without a form preconceived before it's made, right? It's not random. If you had a factory that was making rocket engines, I was just watching a documentary on why the shuttle program has been shut down, and many scientists, as they're looking at the shuttle, we all remember two terrible accidents, one on the takeoff that killed people and one on re-entry, right? Remember those two? And there weren't that many flights, so they're saying, oh, this shuttle program was a disaster. Part of the reason why it was a disaster is the rush to get it done and the importance of having successful trips so that more money can be appropriated was caused short cuts and what have you that ended up being very terrible. I remember seeing another documentary of one of the engineers who worked on those famous rings that cracked or broke or froze something. He was trying to get in touch with those in control of the launch, you know, the T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7. And he knew he wasn't there in Florida when the launch was going to happen, but I don't know if he was close enough to drive or... anyways, he saw the weather report and he saw that the temperatures were going to be cold and he knew something was going to break. And so he tried desperately to halt the launch, but couldn't do it. And it launched and those astronauts were killed. Anyways, so I'm using that as an example. Anything created, if you're going to manufacture rocket engines or pencils, or tables, computers. Anyways, you can't do it arbitrarily. You just don't do your first table, your first rocket engine, and then you start with the same equipment, the same material, and you just do whatever you want. It has no form that you're following. And herein lies the great error of Occam and those who are promoting the transgender gay rights movement, because what they're doing is eliminating this idea that a body, whether it's a piece of wood that turns into a table, or a piece of, wire, foam, steel, metal, all the kinds of things that go into making a rocket engine. Those things have no form. You don't have to concern yourself with an innate form of what you're looking at, studying, using, etc. Obviously, every engineer, if you're going to build a bridge and you know the bridge is going to have to withstand tonnages of traffic going over, including heavy 18-wheel trucks, and the engineer says, well, you know, I like balsa or I like pine wood. I'm going to make this bridge out of pine. And they're going to say, you can't do that. Why? Well, because it's weak wood. It's going to crash the first time a heavy truck rolls over it. He goes, no, I'm going to repurpose this pine wood, and I'm going to give it a different meaning, a different form, a different... I'm going to say that it is as strong as steel. So the great tragedy that this movement, this anti-marriage movement in the different forms it has, is because it's destroying teleology. You're destroying teleology, my friends. We need teleology to survive in this world. Stop destroying teleology. You need a teleology, I need teleology, we all need teleology. And if it's true about building bridges or rocket ships or tables, it's got to be true about the human person. Our bodies are physical, and the physical properties of our bodies then have this kind of form to it. Let me finish here with... don't have the name of this priest, but it's a beautiful website called Aquinas 101.
Now this carpenter might say, well, this table just didn't turn out the way it was supposed to. And by that he means either that his activity of making the table, his efficient causality, somehow went wrong, or that the matter was somehow defective, so that he didn't fully realize the idea he had of the table. This brings us to the fourth reason why the table is the way it is.
Pay attention to this.
The cause is extremely important, and it's called the final cause because it refers to the ultimate end or reason for the thing. What is a table for? In this case, dining. We can't fully explain something unless we know what it is for. Now, of course, the carpenter might have had other reasons for making a table, like earning money, but that human purpose falls outside of the intrinsic end or reason for the table. The final cause of the table itself, properly speaking, doesn't refer to the carpenter's personal motive, but to what a table is for. Now, Aquinas thinks that these four causes can be applied by way of analogy to everything in creation. And so they offer a very powerful way of explaining the why of things.
For readings, podcasts, and more videos like this, go to Aquinas101.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for one of our free video courses on Aquinas.
I like that one. That's good. Well, let's take our other break, okay, Nick? Hour's going along fast enough. So we got to appreciate why William of Ockham was so popular, why we all live in a world that is kind of dominated by his mistake, and how the transgender gay movement is throwing gasoline on the fire of that mistake. This is why this is an angle that some of these people who are reacting negatively to Christian principles, like those who are defending the Dodgers and the baseball team in Los Angeles, of course, for having the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence honored at their game. People are defending them as defenders of the marginalized, defenders of those who are treated badly because they're not like you. And so we gotta analyze this a little bit more. Let's take our next break here, okay? I'm Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are WSFI 88.5 FM and WNDZ AM 750.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak.
More to Life is about living the Catholic difference in our marriages, our families, the way we approach life in general.
It's about celebrating life and our Catholic faith and discovering all the ways God wants to bless us and help us be a blessing to others.
More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak, weekdays 10 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for keeping along, and hope you're enjoying my brain-wrinkling philosophical hour here, trying to help you with a way to give those who are very much trying to defend the those who are promoting the rightness, even the Christianity of transgenderism and homosexuality. I could, and sometimes I do include the artificial contraception issue into this. It goes even deeper, and it's a little harder to see, I'll grant it that, but the principles flow from the same positive thoughts and ideas that nature has a purpose, and the ideas that go contrary to our church's teaching flow from the same errors, as it were. So here, let me read a little bit more from, this is a wonderful article about William of Ockham from the Catholic Encyclopedia, a wonderful resource. We should, many of us, it's huge, tons and tons. The Catholic Encyclopedia was, I don't know, 30 volumes, big, thick, like so many encyclopedias were in the past. But anyways, so this is the part of the entry into William of Ockham's. It says, his controversial writings appear as the advocate of secular absolutism. Secular absolutism. He denies the right of the popes to exercise any temporal power or to interfere in any way whatever in the affairs of the empire, or you could say the state, the prime minister, the king. He even went so far as to advocate the validity, doesn't it always, so, I don't know if it's always, but 90% of the time there's something about sexual morality and views about marriage. He even went so far as to advocate the validity of the adulterous marriage of King Louis and his son, on the grounds of political expediency. I'm not sure which Louis they're talking about, but there were so many King Louis, many in France, of course, and some in England, and the absolute power of the state in such matters. William of Ockham advocated a form of scholasticism, both in method and in content, but the aim of this Reformation movement in general was simplification. Oh boy, now doesn't that ring some bells in my heart and mind? Because who of us haven't been listening to a philosophical argument, especially at that, and say that it's too complicated, can't you simplify it? A lot of times that is a good thing to ask a person, today especially, if somebody's giving an argument and they're using long words that you're not exactly sure how they connect, or academicians are great at that. They just sort of have this sixth sense of knowing that they got to use big long words and tie a whole bunch of things together, and you listen and you know they're speaking your language, but you scratch your head and say, huh? What did you mean? Can't you simplify that? Thomas Aquinas, on the hand, even though much of his stuff is brain wrinkling, head scratching, he did believe that truth is simple, in a very real sense, that you can and should be able to simplify something. But this William of Ockham's criticism of simplification, he used his razor, what he called the law of parsimony, also called Ockham's razor. Here's a little Latin quote: "Entia non sunt multiplicanda sine necessitate." An entity, a thing, should not be multiplied without necessity. With this tendency toward simplification was united a very marked tendency toward skepticism. Okay, so that's another key factor. Okay, we could want something simplified so that we could understand it, but we should not cling to a simple explanation if if the real truth of the matter needs some more explanation. I have to read this again. This tendency toward simplification was united a very marked tendency toward skepticism and distrust, namely the ability of the human mind to reach certitude in the most important problems of philosophy, life. Thus, in the process of simplification, he denied the existence of intentional species. Okay, now that's a $16 word, right? Intentional species. We all know what species are, but, you know, categories of beings, categories of creatures, categories of animals and anything, right? So, but intentional, a particular kind of dog has a purpose that's different than a different kind of dog. Most people who love dogs know that some dogs were bred for hunting. Other dogs were bred for cuddling. Other dogs were bred for farming or chasing critters away. Okay, so William of Ockham rejected the distinction between essence and existence. That's a big thing for Thomas Aquinas. And that's one of the hardest concept of philosophy. It's in the area called metaphysics, where we need to see the difference between essence and existence. So William of Ockham protested against the Thomistic doctrine of active and passive intellect. His skepticism appears in his doctrine that human reason can prove neither the immortality of the soul nor the existence of the soul. Unity and infinity of God, the mind cannot understand or come to any reasonable appreciation of such things. These truths, he taught, are known to us, and this is what kept him from completely being, part of why he was rehabilitated, because he said, oh, these things are truths, but they are known to us by revelation alone, not by thinking. And that's why he's sometimes referred to as the first Protestant, even though he's 200 years before Luther, because what does that mean? Revelation alone, what Luther later on said, sola scriptura. Sola scriptura means the Bible alone, so don't be trying to bring in any reasons that are a part of our rational faculty but are not found in the Bible. That's a huge issue that's still around today, big time. So in ethics, he was a voluntarist. That's a key thing today, too. This is some of you who know me and listened to me before. The new modern act of contrition, I accuse the new modern act of contrition as containing the air of voluntarism. What is that? That is giving the will more power than it really has. And what do we mean by that? This beautiful article says it pretty simply. That means maintaining that all distinction between right and wrong depends on the will. Now, you could say, every distinction of right and wrong depends on the will of God, you might be able to get away with that to some extent, but that would mean God can change his mind, that if God wills something to be right, this to be wrong. It's the whole idea of get with the modern times, right? If we say the church has to get with the modern times, we're trying to say that the right and wrong depends on the will of God. But of course, now in the modern times, we've taken that a step further. We're not saying that, okay, right and wrong depends on the will of God. We're saying right and wrong depends on the will of us humans. And so if there's 12 humans in a room will probably have 12 different ideas of what's right and wrong. And that's where we get the idea of it's right for you, it's wrong for me, it's wrong for you, it's right for me. Go a little farther. Occam's attitude toward the established order of the church and towards the recognized system of philosophy in the academic world of his day was one of protest. He has indeed been called the first Protestant. Nevertheless, he recognized in his polemical writings the authority of the church in spiritual matters and did not diminish that authority. Similarly, although he rejected the rational demonstration of several truths which are fundamental to the Christian system of theology, he held firmly to the same truths as matters of faith. His effort to simplify scholasticism was no doubt well-intentioned, and the fact that simplification was the fashion in those days would seem to indicate that a reform was needed. The over-refined subtleties of discussion among the scholastics themselves, the multiplication of formalities by the followers of Duns Scotus, another philosopher of that days, and undue importance attached to some of the Thomists to their interpretation of the intentional species, and the introduction of the abstruse systems of terminology which exceeded the bounds of good taste and moderation, all these indicate that the period of the decay of scholasticism had set in. Isn't that interesting? Oh, goodness. We're about out of time. Nick, you want to get in the third break before our final? I think we didn't get in our third break, right? If you can jump in and let me know, or should I wrap up here in the last minute or so? A couple of minutes. There we go. Well, let me try to wrap it up this way. Once again, I'm trying to explain why the church will not change its approach or its conclusions about transgenderism and homosexual behavior, because it sees the human person with a body is created by God, and therefore it has these ends, these purposes that are in us, and they're not up to us to change. Like that example of the table. Remember, he saved the final cause, that fourth. Remember, efficient, material, formal, and final. It's hard to remember that. Sometimes I have to remind myself. Efficient, material, formal, and final. Efficient means the craftsman. Material means the stuff you use. Formal means the idea that's in your mind. And final cause is the purpose. Occam's razor was, he says, we got rid of at least two of these, maybe even three, but for sure he denied that God would put any kind of formal idea in things, certainly not a final cause. That as human beings with bodies and souls, our bodies are created in such a way that they're meant for this purpose. That's why one thing I like to challenge people with this. Oh boy, you call for equal rights. And I say, I'm all for equal rights if people are doing equal things. But we're not doing equal things, so to treat people equally for doing different things is also unfair. Anyways, God bless you for listening. Hope I wrinkled your brain. And stay tuned once again, my friends. I am Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change. This is EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are 88.5 FM, WSFI, and we are WNDZ AM 750.
Meaningless thoughts.
strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide.